It's time now for All You Ever Wanted to Know, a chance for you to get to know what's going on in and around your community and the fabulous people that make it happen. With On the Land, here's Jack Dawes.
Well, once again, good morning, and I guess we could say welcome to springtime here on the prairies. We're going to be joined to talk about environment and weather issues with Dr. Tim Ball, but part of the discussion is, what will Donald do? Of course, tomorrow is the day that Donald Trump is sworn in. What will he do about environmental climate change issues, carbon, trade, and other issues? And an even bigger question, of course, for us, what will Trudeau do about the above? Tim Ball is on the phone to discuss it along with our colleague Harry Siemens from southern Manitoba. A new pea processing plant announced in Manitoba and in Saskatchewan, by the way. There was a big announcement at Ag Days in Brandon yesterday. And a successful grain bin rescue at Churchbridge. Thanks to willing hands and plywood, Graham Sorgard escaped a near-death experience, I guess you could call it, just before Christmas. Those stories on the program today. Well, it turns out that President-elect Donald Trump has called on former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, as he's known, as the new U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Perdue's been running a trading company in Atlanta since he left politics in 2011, is the information we have. Now, Brennan Turner of Farm Lead Marketing out of Foam Lake in Saskatoon writes today that most political analysts are optimistic that the leader of American Ag will continue to push Trump on trade, including potentially swaying support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, just one of the trade agreements Trump has continued to suggest, more than suggest, that he will not sign. Now, the new head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, was at an acceptance hearing yesterday. Now, on one issue, he said it's too early to determine if the renewable fuel standards, known as the ethanol mandate, needs to be reworked or not. Of course, that'll have impacts for corn and other biofuel issues. Now, one Carl Eichan, I'll see if I have the right pronunciation of that later, described as an activist investor and staunch critic of the renewable fuel sector, will be a special advisor on regulations, suggesting, again, from market watcher Brennan Turner, that, quote, fresh eyes are going to take some long looks at the status quo. Well, speaking of fresh eyes, before we bring on Tim Ball and our colleague Harry Siemens, we've got some audio lined up here from the confirmation hearings, I think it is the proper term for it, of Mr. Pruitt, who is now going to be the lead guy at the Environmental Protection Agency in the United States. He's with Bernie Sanders, well-known U.S. senator, who, of course, made a run for the presidency. And Sanders, I think you could say, is pretty much badgering the new guy in this interview. But, of course, he holds his ground. Here's the audio.
My office has received a great deal of comments from people in the state of Vermont, which takes environmental protection very seriously, as well as from all over the country. And the fear is that the nomination of Mr. Pruitt is a nomination designed to protect the fossil fuel industry and not the environment. I would like to ask Mr. Pruitt a question. As I understand it, earlier in this hearing, you said that Mr. Trump was wrong in suggesting and stating over and over again that climate change was a quote-unquote hoax. Is that in fact the case?
That is correct, Senator.
Okay. Let me ask you this. As you may know, some 97% in suggesting and stating over and over again that climate change was a quote-unquote hoax. Is that in fact the case?
That is correct, Senator.
Okay. Let me ask you this. As you may know, some 97% of scientists who have written articles for peer-reviewed journals have concluded that climate change is real, it is caused by human activity, and it is already causing devastating problems in our country and around the world. Do you believe that climate change is caused by the emission, by carbon emissions, by human activity?
Senator, as I indicated, you weren't in here during my opening statement, but as I indicated in my opening statement, the climate is changing, and the human activity contributes to that in some manner.
In some manner?
Yes, sir.
97% of the scientists who wrote articles in peer-reviewed journals believe that human activity is the fundamental reason we are seeing climate change. You disagree with that?
I believe the ability to measure with precision the degree of human activity's impact on the climate is subject to more debate on whether the climate is changing or whether human activity contributes to it.
While you are not certain, the vast majority of scientists are telling us that if we do not get our act together and transform our energy system away from fossil fuel, there is a real question as to the quality of the planet that we are going to be leaving our children and our grandchildren. So you are applying for a job as administrator for the EPA to protect our environment. Overwhelming majority of scientists say we have got to act boldly, and you're telling me that there needs to be more debate on this issue and that we should not be acting boldly.
No, Senator, as I've indicated, the climate is changing, and human activity.
But you haven't told me why you think the climate is changing.
Well, Senator, the job of the administrator is to carry out the statutes as passed by this body. And to
why is the climate changing?
Senator, in response to the CO2 issue, the EPA administrator is constrained by statutes.
I'm asking you a personal opinion.
My personal opinion is immaterial. To the job of
you are going to be the head of the agency to protect the environment, and your personal feelings about whether climate change is caused by human activity and carbon emissions is immaterial?
Senator, I've acknowledged to you that the human activity impacts the climate.
Impacts?
Yes.
Scientific community doesn't tell us it impacts. They say it is the cause of climate change. We have to transform our energy system. Do you believe we have to transform our energy system in order to protect the planet for future generations?
I believe the EPA has a very important role at regulating the emissions.
You didn't answer
CO2.
My question. Do you believe we have to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to do what the scientific community is telling us in order to make sure that this planet is healthy for our children and grandchildren?
Senator, I believe that the administrator has a very important role to perform in regulating CO2.
Can you tell me, as I think all of us know, Oklahoma has been subjected to a record-breaking number of earthquakes. Scientists in Oklahoma, or scientists say that Oklahoma is almost certain to have more earthquakes with heightened risk of a large quake probable to endure for a decade, and that the cause of this is fracking. Can you point me, picking up on Senator Harris's discussion with you, can you point me to any opinion that you wrote, any enforcement actions you took against the companies that were injecting waste fracking water?
Senator, let me say I'm very concerned about the connection between activity in Oklahoma.
And therefore, and you must have taken action. I guess, can you tell me who you fined for doing this, if you're very concerned?
The Corporation Commission in Oklahoma is vested with the jurisdiction, and they've actually acted on that.
And you have made public statements expressing your deep concern about this.
We have worked with, through our...
You have made public statements. You're in a state which is seeing a record-breaking number of earthquakes. You're the Attorney General. Obviously, you have stood up and said you will do everything you can to stop future earthquakes as a result of fracking.
Senator, I've acknowledged that I'm concerned about...
You acknowledge that you are concerned. Your state is having a record number of... Well, if that's the kind of administrator for the EPA, your state's having a record-breaking number of earthquakes, you acknowledge you are concerned. If that's the kind of EPA administrator you will be, you're not going to get my vote.
So that, again, Bernie Sanders, I always want to call him Colonel for some reason, I think you'd have to agree, badgering Scott Pruitt, the new head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And with that, let's officially say good morning, first of all, to Harry Siemens from Winkler. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning.
Our broadcast colleague, and Harry's going to chirp in here. But I asked Dr. Tim Ball, climatologist, and I think who has met Scott Pruitt, to join us on the line from Victoria. Good morning, Tim Ball.
Good morning, Jack. I haven't actually met Scott Pruitt, but I met the person who's been in charge of
preparing for Scott Pruitt's taking over the EPA, a guy by the name of Myron Ebell. I was in Washington recently to do that.
So there's a whole lot on the table in that extended clip we played. And by the way, I do have to credit C-SPAN, my producer, Scott Fitzsimmons, able to call up that audio for us. And I didn't really intend to get into the whole thing about earthquakes, but it certainly proves my point that this was not an interview. This was a Bernie Sanders rant and attacking Scott Pruitt. But that being as it is, Tim Ball, what I wanted to really focus in on is Sanders' continued contention that 98.5% of peer-reviewed scientists agree that we're into a man-made global warming climate change scenario. You have looked at that question extensively. What are your comments?
Well, the answer is that it was based upon a study done by a fellow by the name of Cook, who's at Queensland University in Australia. And he claimed that he'd looked at 11,944 papers, peer-reviewed papers. He actually only looked at the abstracts. He didn't read the papers. And he concluded that 97.1% of them expressed an opinion supporting climate change. A fellow by the name of Lord Monckton, who I think may be familiar to your listeners, and others have looked at Cook's work and discovered that by his own definition, only 41 agreed with the hypothesis. And in other words, it wasn't 97%, it was 0.3%. So the number that's out there was obtained by an academic through peer review, but it's completely false. And that's, of course, the problem that we've got. And what you saw with Sanders, by the way, was the kind of bullying and badgering that people are sick and tired of. Ask your questions. Ask them civilly. Don't play the gotcha and you said and what have you got to say here. And then when you try to answer, they interrupt you all the time. This is what people are tired of with politics completely. So the 97% figure is completely false. The only 97% figure that I would promote is that 97% of scientists have never even looked at what the climate change scientists are actually saying, the global warming people are actually saying. And when they do, they get the shock that this guy, I'm going to read you this very quickly, Klaus Eckhart Pulse, a German meteorologist and physicist, and here's what he wrote. 10 years ago, I simply parroted what the IPCC told us. And, of course, that's the message, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's the, quote-unquote, official climate agency. He said, 10 years ago, I simply parroted what they told us. One day, I started checking the facts and data. First, I started with a sense of doubt, but then I became outraged when I discovered that much of what the IPCC and the media were telling us was sheer nonsense and was not even supported by any scientific facts and measurements. To this day, I still feel shame that as a scientist, I made presentations of their science without first checking it. And of course, and I would go on about this, but anybody that looks at the science that they're presenting in their reports knows that this is exactly the case, that they don't have any evidence, that it's all computer model generated. And this is something we did in Australia recently. We challenged the bureaucrats and said, okay, show us the actual evidence. Don't show us what a computer model's telling you. Show us the actual evidence of humans causing global warming or climate change. And of course, you notice that even Pruitt acknowledged that humans are having some impact. And I'll just finish with this last point. The agency that he's supposed to be heading, the EPA, came out with a report just recently which said that fracking is not a problem and is not causing earthquakes. So if Sanders had done his homework properly and not selected those pieces that he thought he could make political points with rather than discuss the issue properly, he would have found out that the EPA says that fracking is not a problem.
There's a whole bunch of things we can learn from that audio clip we heard. I was thinking that it's a real good example of part of the difference between our system and the U.S. system when these appointees come in. But Tim Ball has sent me links to a couple of articles that discuss this issue that Bernie Sanders was harping on. No, one of them is the Climate Skeptics Party .blogspot.ca, and then goes on Cook Wrong on Consensus. I think people can probably find that. That, again, is the Climate Skeptic Party .blogspot.ca, and this was posted in 2013. The others link that Tim Ball has sent me is Forbes.com, and then you get into /sites Alex Epstein, and it goes on 97 of climate scientists agree is wrong, etc. So I think probably people can find those corroborating articles. Harry Siemens, I know you're itching to jump in with a question or a comment for Tim Ball here.
Well, I just, you know, I'm really happy how Tim was able to make that absolutely clear, and I hope your listeners, and I hope there's listeners, you know, within our farm organizations and within our, you know, government bureaucracies and elected officials. And I mean, we're doing so many different things based on skewed numbers, and it's too bad that that we've come so far, especially when you and I serve agriculture, the basic industry, and the farmers and the ag people keep adapting to what really needs to happen, and that's to make sure the environment is safe. I've never seen a farmer wants to destroy the environment and at the same time feed the world around the world, or feed the people around the world.
Exactly, Harry, and Trump, by the way, in one of his speeches on the stump, said, and it was in one of the farm states, and he said, no, agriculture has been ignored for too long. And, of course, you and I have talked about that, Harry, over the years. Yeah. You remember when most of the people that lived in the cities had come from the farms, and then we went through a phase where most of the people living in the cities still had relatives on the farms. Now it's not true at all. And I remember talking in Lloydminster a few years ago when I pointed out to an audience of 1,000 farmers, and they were saying, oh, you know, nobody's listening to us. I said, let me tell you why. 64% of the people in Toronto were not even born in Canada. They don't even know you're out here. And so, of course, the gradual separation of the city from the agricultural production has been going on for 40 years. And you remember, Harry and Jack, when all the major newspapers across Canada had a section on agriculture. Not even the Prairie papers have a section on agriculture now. And so you see the gradual detachment of the urban area from the food production. And, of course, that goes on throughout civilizations. And, in fact, the fall of most civilizations occurs when the urban people ignore the problems that are going on the farms with soil erosion and droughts and all of these other things. They become detached from it. And Harry, both of you will know that I created that comment several years ago that there are no cities in the farms, but there are no farms in the cities, but there are no cities without farms. And Trump has acknowledged that, and of course the guy that he's appointed as head is going to pursue that very vigorously. These people in the city have got to remember that without the food from the farm, they don't even exist. End of story.
Yeah, you're right, and it's absolutely exciting. You know, I've been able to talk and tweet with a couple of the key farm broadcasters in the United States, and basically this Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, he's a veterinarian, and so he's going to come from science, is what they're telling me, and he's a businessman, and he's basically going to not be a wildflower in the cabinet. He's going to be there standing up for agriculture. And one of the key points that they told me is that finally, the consumer groups won't have the same influence that they've had in the last 8 years.
Well, and that's the problem is the imbalance. I mean, you need that input from the consumer groups, but it's been dominating. And it caused me, and I'm sort of like I'm throwing out my statements over the last 40 years. But, you know, as I said, the tail has always wagged the dog. But what we got now is the flea on the hair on the tail that's wagging the dog. And this is what Trump is going to put a stop to. He's not saying that one group is going to absolutely dominate, But there's got to be a balance, and this is what everybody's looking at. The other thing, of course, is that Perdue, like all of the other members of Trump's inner circle and his appointments to dominant positions, none of them need the jobs. They don't need the job. In fact, you've got to admire them for taking it because they're taking huge cuts in pay, and they're doing it because they obviously seriously care about the country and what's happening. And Trump himself is that's the case. And so I think that, and of course they're all saying, oh, they're all billionaires. Yeah, they're billionaires because they've been successful in society. They know what makes society work. So why wouldn't you hire people that make things work? That's what we need.
You bet. And the nice thing about it is they're not going to have to come in and try and rip off the system so they can enrich themselves. They are rich, and they're going to make sure others don't.
So my guests on the land today are Harry Siemens in Winkler and Dr. Tim Ball in Victoria, and discussing, amongst agriculture in general, of course, but the posting of some new lead figures in the Trump administration, Donald Trump being sworn in tomorrow. Tim Ball, while we're on this related topic, I do want to ask you your thoughts on what kind of a spring is ahead of us and summer from a climatologist point of view. We heard last week in Saskatoon from Drew Lerner. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are. But before we get there, the whole issue of carbon tax, of course, ties into this, and the rationale for carbon tax is supposedly that this is a man-made climate change period that we are in. Tim Ball, you now are in a province which has a carbon tax in action, correct?
Yes, BC was the first jurisdiction in North America to introduce a carbon tax.
So
I have a question for you.
Just stand by, Harry.
I'm sitting, but that's okay.
Yeah. So Tim Ball, I just want to ask you how the carbon tax is going so far, or how it's going down with people in BC.
Well, all it's doing is generating revenue for the government, which, of course, was its sole purpose. It hasn't achieved any of its goals. It was supposed to reduce the amount of driving that people were doing. It hasn't stopped it. It hasn't even caused it to waver at all. And it was supposed to be revenue neutral. It's not revenue neutral. So none of its objectives have been achieved except the one, of course, that the only reason that politicians like it is because it brings in more revenue and it makes them appear that they're green and saving the planet. So in BC, it's been an absolute bust, and people are paying higher taxes for their gas than they need to. And, of course, the biggest problem of all is that it's supposed to reduce CO2. And this is where I disagree with Scott Pruitt. CO2 is not a problem at all. In fact, we need more CO2 in the atmosphere. The levels are the lowest in about 600 million years, and plants need CO2. Patrick Moore, the former founder of Greenpeace, is going around the world now saying, hey, the levels need to be raised, not lowered. And we know that on the prairies, for example, 2 bushels per acre increase in yields over the last 50 years have been because there's been a slight increase in CO2 in the atmosphere. And in commercial greenhouses, they pump 3 times the natural level into the greenhouse to increase the yields by a factor of four. So the problem that they're arguing about, CO2, is not, in fact, a problem. And in fact, by reducing it, they make a real problem. So it's an unbelievable mess that they've created with all their lies.
So I'm just going to get...
You answered in part, but there were some stories saying that gas consumption in downtown Vancouver was actually down because of the tax, but then they found out that those same people were filling up across the line in the U.S.
Well, it's not only that, but of course the thing is that you can't drive as fast in Vancouver because they put so much restrictions on the cars. They're doing the same here in Victoria. I mean, they're building a bridge here in Victoria. It's got 3 lanes on it, and they got 4 lanes coming on into it from each side. I mean, you want to talk about bureaucracy and madness? So there it is.
Oh, boy.
So it's on the land from the Rock 98.5, and we have on the line with us from Victoria, Dr. Tim Ball, and from Winkler, Manitoba, Canada, our co-broadcaster buddy Harry Siemens. We're going to take a break here, gentlemen. Then when I come back, Tim, I would like to ask you your views on what sort of a spring and summer you see ahead of us. On the Land from the Rock, I'm Jack Duz.
The Rock Business Guide, featuring these rock-solid businesses.
This is David Disty of Disty Counseling Services. I'm passionate about building relationships as God desires to see them. Looking through the scriptures, we see numerous examples of relationships, both ones that worked and ones that didn't. We also see principles of sound relationships in how God deals with us. Using these principles and examples, I strive to help others develop their relationships into what God wants for us. If you want to grow your relationships, call David Disty at 316-0101.
This is Jeff from Everlast Eaves and Exteriors. Are you tired of watching your heating budget dollars fly out those drafty windows? You'll enjoy winter energy savings and comfort with your new high-performance PVC windows from Everlast Eaves and Exteriors. Premium renovators and premium quality windows is what you'll find at Everlast Eaves and Exteriors. Call us at 786-7055.
The Rock Business Guide, featuring these rock-solid businesses.
Is now the time? I'm Glenn Seward. If you've heard our Today's Great Idea stories here on the Rock 98.5, brought to you by the Key Auto Group, you know every great business or invention was started by someone just like you, who took action and overcame some hurdles. What you may not know is at todaysgreatidea.com, we help people with great ideas craft compelling business plans, build smart investor pitch decks, and tell their story really well. It's what we do. Find us today at todaysgreatidea.com, and let's get started.
Most of us don't like January weather, but we sure all like the Century Glass Winter Window Sale. Order now and receive a 10% discount on windows, doors, sealed units, and winter installations. Call Century Glass in Melville. You'll enjoy significant savings on your energy bills, and you'll save on your new custom windows and installation. In addition, you'll pay no mileage. They service the entire Parkland area and beyond. No matter where you live, give them a call. Century Glass Melville. Call 306-728-2211 or visit their showroom for a free estimate.
You're listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you have a question for today's guest, call 783-5160 or 1-855-449-5160.
On the Land from the Rock, and Dr. Tim Ball is with us from, I don't know how sunny it's been in Victoria recently, Tim, but you guys have had some tough weather there. What are you seeing for, well, let's say the rest of the winter and into the spring here on the prairies right now?
Yeah, it's been pretty cold. In fact, local people telling me that the longest spell of cold weather they've seen in decades. And that's, of course, in keeping with what's happening to the global pattern of weather. Spain just experienced the heaviest snowfall they've had in their record. And so you're seeing these kinds of extremes around the world. And, it's due, of course, as we've talked about on this program, to the pattern of the jet stream waves that are pushing well north, which, and that, of course, is why they're able to say, oh, the Arctic ice is different, and also well south with the Spain in snow, or snow in Spain, I should say. And so these extremes, the way you notice it across the prairies, of course, is the different wind patterns, with more southerly and northerly winds than we normally, whatever that is, what we were used to for about 30 years. And so we're seeing that change of pattern continue. And right now we're getting cold air pushing in from the northwest again, and that will push through the prairies. Of course, it's because we're now further into the spring season, it won't be quite as cold. So the extremes will continue, but not to the extent because of the advancing season. And this pattern will continue. I am a little concerned about the precipitation for the summer on the prairies. We're overdue on the 22-year drought cycle, and I talked about this 22 years ago. And if we get into a pattern of strong southerly winds that persist for 8 to 10 weeks, as these patterns are tending to do, in the spring and summer, it could create some moisture problems on the prairies. But we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what these jet stream waves are doing. But right now, you're in a milder spell, but it's breaking again into another colder spell. And that pattern will continue, as most of the prairie farmers that listen to us know, the cycle of the jet stream waves.
So southern Manitoba in particular has had a lot of heavy storms in the last while, most of which we here in the Yorkton area have escaped. One supposes that much more moisture coming between now and spring is going to be maybe what they've already got, and maybe Harry has a comment on that after your comments, Tim.
Yeah, well, of course, the temperature that I talked about was one thing, but the precipitation pattern is exactly the same. The snow in Spain is one example. You see the rain returning in California and heavy snow in California. So that pattern, wherever the jet stream or the polar front that parallels it, wherever it passes through an area, that's where you're going to get the heavy rain. And so you see that's what's been happening. The cold air has pushed it down so that it's going through Manitoba, giving that heavier precipitation in southern Manitoba. And the precipitation pattern follows that jet stream wave in the same way, and the farmers can watch that and determine when they're going to get the precipitation and how much they're going to get. But it's also altering the pattern.
Tim Ball, here in Saskatchewan, one of the big discussion points, and we've been following, is the matter of the Quill Lakes, which are at huge levels, and it won't take much to push that water down its natural channel into the Qu'Appelle Valley. As you see it right now, do you think we're going to be seeing some of those heavier, February, March snowfalls that we often get?
Well, yeah, for a couple of reasons. One, of course, and by the way, for your listeners to know, I chaired the Assiniboine River Management Advisory Board, so I'm very familiar with that whole Souris, Qu'Appelle, and Assiniboine River Basin. And of course, it because of it's formed by a meltwater channel from the glaciers, it's confined, and therefore flooding in the base of the bottom of it is very, very easily created. And in Manitoba, they try to control it with dams at Shellmouth and so on. And the same situation is developing. But we went into the fall with good soil moisture and deep soil moisture, which, of course, was the problem during the drought years. And then, so if the soil is saturated and frozen, then you get the snow melt and then the rain on top of that. That combination of events is what will push the lakes, such as the Quill Lakes, over the top. So it is lining up to a potential for flooding. Yes,
Tim, I meant to get a clarification question when you were discussing. You said you had concerns about moisture this summer. Are you concerned about too much moisture or not enough?
Well, I'm concerned about not enough in the sense of the actual precipitation that we get through the summer, because there's enough moisture now for the crop to get started. But of course, as farmers know, as long as you got enough moisture for germination, then what all you need is just that one good shot of rain, preferably say around June, to make the crop come on and fill out. And I remember one year, I think it was 1984, where if you looked at the actual precipitation record, you would have said, hey, lousy crop. But the timing of the rain was more important than the amount. It came at exactly the same time you would put it on if you were irrigating. And so that's the situation that I'm looking at, is that there'll be enough moisture for germination of the crop, hopefully the flooding won't delay getting access to the land. But then the issue becomes that shot of rain that's needed once the plant is starting to grow, once it gets beyond that five leaf stage and beyond.
Exactly, those timely spring rains.
Yeah.
Well, Tim Ball, We need to move on. And Tim, we really appreciate your time this morning. Of course, if you felt like hanging in for the rest of the program, you'd be welcome to. But we'll be keeping in touch with you and seeing how things unfold with the inauguration of Trump and his new environmental protection man and the new ag secretary there.
Yeah, Jack, he's going to clean the swamp with a tsunami. The first 100 days is just going to be absolutely incredible. And I'm happy to step out because I leave the farmers in the good hands of you and that man in Manitoba.
Happy New Year there, Tim, to you, you and your wife, Marty.
So, Tim, just before you go, when's Marty going to be able to get out and play golf?
Oh, she's out there today.
Oh, I hate that woman.
Oh, boy.
She tests me sometimes, too, Jack.
Yeah, okay. Tim Ball is in Victoria. Thanks again for your time, Tim.
You're welcome.
Right.
Thank you.
So Harry Siemens, just to continue on, I guess the big talk at Ag Days yesterday in Brandon, and of course I think our listeners are aware, Manitoba Ag Days is a huge farm show, just like we experienced with the crop week in Saskatoon last week, and it's a tradition there for big announcements to be made. This is the 40th annual Ag Days event in Brandon, and I understood the announcement was made at Brandon, but Harry is telling me it was made at the legislature, and that's understandable because a $400 million pea processing plant is no small potatoes, if I can use that analogy. And I guess it should be pointed that, with no politics intended, the plant will be based in the hometown of Manitoba's Premier Brian Pallister. Brian Pallister is the second most famous person from Portage la Prairie. Of course, your humble broadcaster, me, is the most famous. Right, Harry?
You bet. You know what? And also talking to Cam Blight, the Reeve of the RM of Portage la Prairie, really, really excited about this plant coming there. And, you know, in the initial release, I looked at it and I asked questions on Twitter. There was, here's the premier and making a big deal of it, and it is a big deal at the legislature, but there was nothing about their involvement. So I kept asking, and finally this morning they put out an additional release correcting their first one. They left out the involvement of the provincial government because, the provincial government isn't out there taking some of the credit if they're not paying anything, right?
Well, I did. The news release I saw yesterday was very, very vague, quite right.
Here's the line that they sent out today, or the paragraph. The Manitoba government is providing tax increment financing. They're calling it TIF, of up to $6.82 million, which will assist in covering the site development cost for the facility. And that's what it should be. You know what? Help them put it up, but don't finance the facility, because this company has over 3 billion pounds. That's like more than dollars a year in revenue. So I was hoping that we weren't going to give them a pile of money. But when they have to do infrastructure, that's good. The TIF will support the development by providing grants equivalent to applicable incremental provincial education taxes over a set number of years based on the initial assessed value of the property. So that's a little bit of, you've got to figure that one out. But basically, they're providing, and that reminds me, Jack, of Harry Ens, who, in my opinion, one of the best ag ministers we ever had. He says, you know what? Government should help provide the infrastructure for business and then get out of the way.
Absolutely. Harry, I guess the timing of this comes when new crop yellow peas are trading or selling. Farmers are reaching $8 Canadian per bushel. And in some cases, there's some good terms available with that. I should mention that I found out at Crop Week last week in Saskatoon that the Weber family, Heidi Dutton Weber, well, actually the Dutton family, Duttenweber is her married name, but Heidi Duttenweber is heading up a family venture. They've begun construction on a pea processing plant at Vanscoy, Saskatchewan, another new one, processing for the protein meal market. We'll actually feature that story on an upcoming program. So it's good news on both fronts here.
Well, you and I talked about the group that's from Brandon Economic Development group that's looking at attracting a soybean processing plant in southwestern Manitoba, and that also got a new they released something else at the Ag Days in Brandon, basically giving it a little more impetus to make sure people understand what they are really trying to do. And you know what, this is just good news. When the first canola plant started, and now we have how many, and we're processing stuff, and farmers are just reaping the benefits of the added value right here at home.
Right, you are. Well, equally interesting, really, to the story about the pea plant, in my view, is we talked about what's next from Donald Trump. What's next for Hunter Harrison? He of the Canadian Pacific Railway, former CEO of CN, is moving on somewhere. Harrison and the company announced Wednesday a mutually agreed-upon package, quote-unquote. They call it a retirement, but Harrison has waived all his retirement benefits, including his CPR pension. Mentioned were certain modifications to his employment arrangements that would allow him to, quote, pursue opportunities involving other Class 1 railroads. So what does this mean? For further insights, I turn to a long-time transportation industry analyst and consultant, Mary Jane Bennett. Ms. Bennett also brings a lawyer's mind to the transport arena, and she once was a part of the CTA review of our transport system.
You've had some experience with Hunt Harrison in the industry, and you say he's had a significant impact on movement of goods in Canada. Would you like to elaborate on that a bit, Mary Jane?
Well, it's not, Jack, just on the movement of goods in Canada, which is one part of Harrison's strength. It's the fact related to that is that by increasing the speed, efficiency, velocity that goods move throughout the country, what he's done is contributed towards GDP growth in the country. But there's more to his story than that, although that is a big part of it. He's also been responsible for huge jumps in shareholder prices to adding great value to Canadian companies, being both CN and CP. For example, when he took over at CP in June of 2012, shares were worth $50. Within a couple of years, the share, I think by 2016, they were up at $200 a share. He's increased the operating ratio at both CN and CP significantly. The operating ratio is a railroad term which looks at the expenses in operating a railway as a percentage of the revenue, and it's known across North America as the industry benchmark for judging the performance of a railway. So when he took over CP, it had a very high operating ratio. That is, its expenses were way too high. It was at 80% in 2012. By 2016, he'd reduced that to 59.8%. He had a similar record at his previous railway, which was CN. When he took over, when he was, he'd been previously at Illinois Central, and when CN bought Illinois Central, he was snapped up, and he's, Paul Tellier, who was running CN at the time, took over on the financial end, and Harrison took over on operations and marketing, and results soon came in. Cash flows and and revenues were way up. The operating ratio at 89% when he took over in 1998 was reduced to 61% in 2006. So this is someone with he has a no-nonsense approach to railroading. He says what's on his mind. There's no hidden agenda in his approach to things. He's advised the government and the Harper government for years now on the fierce need to upgrade the hopper cars in the hopper car fleet, which is owned.
That hopper car fleet, Mary Jean Bennett discussing, they're technically owned by the government of Canada, but it's in dire need of upgrading. Now, quite a glowing report from Mary Jane Bennett. We know that just mentioning the railways in some farmers' minds is a red flag, and they get angry about it. But Mary Jane Bennett obviously feels there's more to the story, and unfortunately time doesn't allow us to go deep into that. Now, according to this week's Rail Performance Report, CN supplied 88% of the hopper cars ordered by shippers for Grain Week 22, just a week or two ago, resulting in an unfulfilled shipper demand of 455 hopper cars. CP supplied 85% of the orders in that week 22, also resulting in an unfulfilled shipper demand of 487 hopper cars. Now, when I questioned Ms. Bennett about those numbers, she again pointed out to me that that is probably tied back to the age of those hopper cars, and it's a big debate that we need to have a discussion about transportation here in Canada and moving grain. So with that, Harry Siemens, final comment from you on grain shipping.
Well, you know, we ran those two interviews with CN executives, right? A couple of
yes.
Before Christmas, and
yep.
And you know what? This is, you know, they're into the whole aspect of wanting to move farmers' grain, and not only that, they have already fixed, repaired 700 hopper cars in this last year, and they want to do more. And so I think all of this is moving in the right direction. The one thing we need to see is where is CP at all of this, because they're still worried about their shareholders more than the farmers who need the grain moved.
Great. Harry, I have a great grain bin escape story that I want to get as much on as we can today. Are you going to stay with us till
no,
the top?
I'm going to head out.
Okay. Great having you on the program. Great contribution, Harry Siemens and Winkler. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
You bet. Well, just as a footnote to that rail story, the total value of benefits and awards forfeited by Hunter Harrison is about $118 million. Not a bad package there, but he's agreed to sell all his CP shares by the end of May this year. What will the next trip be for Hunter Harrison? I guess we'll stand by and find out. So, my producer, Scott Fitzsimmons, do we need to go to a commercial break here, Scott? What a great way to spend Christmas then with your family. Graham Sorgard from Churchbridge almost didn't, was successfully, he escaped from a grain bin with help from friends and neighbors and employees at Sorgard Seeds at Churchbridge. That story next.
What a great way to start a new year. Purchase a new 2015 or 2016 Kia Forte or Rio from Key Yorkton Kia, and they'll throw in a free factory-installed remote start valued at $600. Save $4,000 on the Kia Rio, featuring backup camera and Bluetooth. Check out the Kia Forte, discounted over $7,000 to $19,656. 2017 will be a great year with trouble-free traveling in your new Rio or Forte. And for a limited time, you'll get a free remote start. You best head over to Key Yorkton Kia now, a part of the Key Automotive Group, 134 Broadway East, or check out KeyYorktonKia.com.
You won the bunch for lunch.
Really? I never win anything.
Everyone can be a winner. Call in during our all-request lunch at noon from Monday to Friday and get entered to win a bouquet of flowers from Growers Direct, plus a certificate to West Broadway Grill. No open late. What are you waiting for? Call in today. Bunch for Lunch, only from The Rock 98.5. The Rock Business Guide, featuring these rock-solid businesses.
Value Tire is like no other with the largest selection of tires in Yorkton. With safety as top priority, their automotive technicians are front-end specialists offering oil changes and SGI inspections. Trust the professionals at Value Tire, Highway 10 East Yorkton.
Sleep better and live better with a new mattress from Modern Mattress in Yorkton, the home of exceptional low prices on quality mattresses. Free delivery and setup, and they'll even remove your old mattress. Modern Mattress next door to the old Liquidation World building on Livingstone in Yorkton.
The Rock Business Guide, featuring these rock-solid businesses.
Start the new year off right with a fresh new look for your home with stunning new floors from Carpet One Floor and Home. Their semi-annual flooring sale and clearance is your chance to get the savings you want on a great selection of floors. Hardwood, carpet, luxury vinyl tiles, and more. Let their hometown experts save you time and money. You'll enjoy the beauty and comfort of your new flooring while enhancing the value of your home. The semi-annual flooring sale and clearance, only for a limited time and only at Carpet One Floor and Home, 12 Livingstone Street in Yorkton. Carpet One. Beautiful, made affordable.
You're invited to join the crew and dance up a storm at the New Horizons Seniors Dance tomorrow at 8 p.m. at the New Horizons Center on 1st Avenue North. For $10 a person, your family can enjoy a fun time along with lunch and lots of good old-fashioned dancing. So polish up those dancing shoes and see you tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at the New Horizons Senior Center on 1st Avenue North in Yorkton.
You're listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you have a question for today's guest, call 783-5160 or 1-855-449-5160.
So we've heard some tragic stories about people getting trapped in grain bins, but at least one of them recently had a happy ending, and I was able to get this. Well, I want to give credit to my friend and colleague Bill Johnson at the Four Town Journal in Langenberg, who featured the story of Graham Sorgard's escape from a grain bin in the paper last week. And I was able to speak with Graham this morning about that experience.
Graham, I believe the incident we're going to talk about happened on December 22nd. Why were you in a grain bin that day?
Well, we were shipping wheat out, and it's a large 30,000 bushel bin, and we've had trouble in the past with the floor grates that would keep you from stepping into the floor auger plug up. And when they plug up, it's really a tough situation to deal with. It's almost impossible to deal with without getting in the bin. You have to get in with a piece of rebar or some kind of stick and poke away to clear the floor grate.
So obviously this is something you'd done before.
Yes, that's correct.
So Graham, I understand from the account from our mutual friend Bill Johnson in the Four Town Journal that the first thing you did when the grain started to surround you was you started texting.
Yes, that's right. See, because I thought I was taller than the grain at the door, I didn't have a lookout guy, which you would ordinarily have, or even two, one guy in the bin and one guy at the top of the roof. And so I was communicating with the fellow outside who was running there, just asking, is it coming out? Have I cleared the grate? It's like that. And so we had been texting back and forth. And then things had actually been running for several minutes when I completely cleared the grate. And so then when I realized it started sucking me in and I realized I was in trouble, I started frantically texting the guy tried to shut off the conveyor immediately. Or the floor auger, I believe.
I'm sorry, you couldn't quite catch that last sentence?
Oh, so then I was frantically texting the guy outside to shut off the auger immediately.
All right. So, and that's one of your staff, I assume?
That's correct. Yeah, his name is Derek.
Yeah. That point you knew were in some trouble. So was it Derek then that kind of mobilized people to start trying to get you out of there?
That's right, yeah. So I texted Derek. I said, like, I'm in trouble. I need help. And so he went to get another employee. And then he also told the truck driver that I was in. There was a truck driver, Daryl, from Renda Farms that was there, and he told him I was in trouble. And so right away, Daryl, and then who was from the Rendas, and then Jerry, another employee of mine, I saw them come up on top of the bin and came in to start assisting me.
Graham, as I think I mentioned to you, I have helped around farms a bit. I've shoveled green and whatnot, but I wouldn't have had a clue what to do. Whose idea was it to surround you with, it looks to me from the picture I saw, of maybe half-inch plywood, is it?
Yes, and that was Daryl from the Renda. Thankfully, he had actually worked in avalanche rescue, and so as soon as he saw me, he said, we have to fence him off, was the words that he used. And so I believe he suggested plywood, and so that was quite a job, too, because they had to run over and get the plywood we had in the shop, and then you have to carry it all the way up the staircase to get to the top of the bin, and then some of the plywood was too large to fit through the man hatch at the side of the bin, so they actually had to carry it up to the very peak of the bin and drop it in the middle. And I know everyone was exhausted when we were finished, that's for sure.
You mean they had to take it in the door and then carry it up or carry it up on the outside?
Yeah, we couldn't get the door open, so they had to carry it up the upside. But there's a man hatch right where the roof of the bin starts.
Okay.
And that's usually how you get in a bin. There's a ladder there. But
okay.
That hatch is pretty small. The plywood wouldn't fit through it. So they actually had to climb to the very top, the very peak of the bin, and drop it into the hole on top.
Okay. I didn't even think that would be big enough for a piece of plywood. Well,
no, and they probably weren't full-size seats, but they were as big as we could get in. You can kind of bend them, too. They're a little bit flexible. So,
yeah. So, Graham, what was your state of mind at that time?
Honestly, by then, I felt, I was still worried, but kind of the panic of when I thought I was going to be completely submerged had subsided, and I was calm. But I was confident that they would get, like I say, the panic portion of it was before they got the auger shut off. That was when I was very, very scared.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So now eventually some EMO people, fire department people were called in?
Yes. So we didn't act fast enough there. And actually the secretary, Brenda Becker, when they told her what had happened, we actually do have a written response plan, and the first thing is to call 911. So she had the presence of mind to do that immediately, and so then they came out, and along with the ambulance from Langenberg, and that just really relaxed, I guess, further. I mean, obviously, still are a little bit, not, I don't know, frantic is the right word, but. Just that they were there with air, or if I'd been hurt getting out, or say if you had, anything from hypothermia to problem from the grain being compressed so hard against you, that they were there for medical, help. And then also just to have more people there that have trained in, and rescue and whatnot. So, no, it was a real relief to see them there.
Well, that's just part of the story from Graham Sorgard, and due to the extended discussion we had on the environment earlier, I can't bring you that full story today, but we promise we will tell the rest of the story at another time, and thank goodness Graham Sorgard got to spend Christmas with his family and the community, and of course, great job by his staff and the EMO people, the firefighters from Churchbridge. Happy ending to that story. Well, and a happy ending to the program today. We thank you for joining us. And thanks, Scott, our producer, for putting it all together for us. On the land, from the rock, I'm Jack Dawes.
Thanks for listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you or your organization would like to appear on the program, call Jordan at 306-786-7625. All You Ever Wanted to Know, only on The Rock 98.5. You're listening to CJJC-FM in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, recipient of the Yorkton Chamber's 2016 Small Business of the Year Award. Your music, your station, The Rock 98.5.